I'm just going to say this and then we can get going. Hello, Wall Street? Where you been? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Thursday today, I do believe it's the 11th of June. Good as always to have you along, everybody. One hates to be that guy, but I do believe I am professionally obliged today to be that guy and say if you didn't know this was coming, you have not been paying attention. You'll hear or have already heard probably much market commentary today saying, oh, yeah, no, Jay Powell was really downbeat in his press conference yesterday, so that's why Wall Street cratered on this Thursday. Here, though, is another way to frame that. Maybe, just maybe, the Fed chair looked around at millions of people being out of work for the foreseeable future, consumer demand still weak on a very good day, the prospect of government support for this economy running out at the end of next month, and he was realistic. Choose your interpretation if you like, but either way, traders today, having taken off their rose-colored glasses, looked around and for the first time in a good long while said, uh-oh. The other thing going on right now, of course, is the long overdue look at systemic economic racism in this country. People are doing it. Institutions are having a look, and businesses as well. A lot of big corporate brands, as we have been reporting, are scrambling to find an appropriate response. So, too, are small businesses, already under strain from the quarantine. They are trying to navigate what they need to do for their businesses and what they need to do for their communities and their employees. Marketplace's Kimberly Adams has that one.
At Lock Love Salon here in D.C., owner Sally Watts has just started welcoming back clients and staff.
Antoine, can you come up when you get a moment?
Normally, when Black Lives Matter protests are going on, he says he'd be out on the street posting pictures of his team at demonstrations, donating money to social justice groups. But the salon has been closed for months under lockdown, and his location in L.A. as well.
And to be juggling both situations where I feel terrible that I can't even be more responsive in the way that I normally would be.
He's still supporting the movement as best he can, but he says a big part of that is trying to keep as many of his staff employed as possible.
We have the same amount of rent and then back pay and then temporary plastic drapes and masks for staff, masks for our clients, face shields, UV ovens.
Higher costs for PPE moving forward are also playing into the calculations for Shobha Tumala. She owns a chain of hair removal salons, almost all of which are still closed, including one here in D.C. that was boarded up when some of the protests here turned into violent clashes with police. And in the midst of all of that,
so our insurance just expired June 1st.
She says, based on the quotes she's getting, rates have gone way up. Meanwhile, her income has gone way down.
We are probably going to end up paying close to what we paid last year for, you know, what we're estimating will be maybe a third or a quarter of the revenues.
In Minneapolis, where George Floyd was killed in police custody, Lee Wallace owns Peace Coffee in the neighborhood where the police precinct burned. She says she knows she should be thinking about stuff like insurance, but
when you're in the middle of the kind of heartbreak and pain that our community is going through, I haven't been able to think that far ahead yet.
Her business is holding up okay, getting support from people all over the country and the community.
I think everybody here is trying to support the peaceful protests that are going on, looking forward to the state's investigation into the Minneapolis Police Department.
Wallace says she sympathizes with all the small business owners who've lost what may be their life's work. At the same time, acknowledges the pain in the community that she says needs to be addressed. In Washington, I'm Kimberly Adams for Marketplace.
Wall Street today, as I said, may be tuning into the real economy. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. Two items with which to tee up this next story. First of all, Merriam-Webster, the dictionary people, say they are going to revise the entry for the word racism to more accurately reflect how systemic its oppression is. Item number two, the Recording Academy, the people in charge of the Grammys, are going to drop the word urban from their award categories. A couple of record labels have done the same thing, dropping that word. Radio stations are moving that way as well. Marketplace's Erica Barris now on What's in a Word.
After Tyler, the Creator, won a Grammy in January, he had some thoughts about the way his music is categorized.
I don't like that urban word. It's just a politically correct way to say the N-word to me.
There's urban contemporary, urban Latino, urban gospel, and more. The word really only means one thing, says A.D. Carson, a professor of hip-hop at the University of Virginia.
The genre categories have attempted really to correspond to the bodies of the people who make the music more than describing like what we might observe or hear to be unique characteristics of any of the music that's being produced.
Because there's a range of music being produced. There's Tyler, the Creator. But there's also poppy music, hip-hop, even country. This isn't the first time the music business has changed the language it uses to refer to music by Black artists. In 1942, Billboard magazine unveiled a new chart called the Harlem Hit Parade.
Take it and give.
Then it became race records, then rhythm and blues, then soul. The phrase urban contemporary took off in the 1970s. Using different words for music by Black and white artists hides the unequal ways they've been promoted and paid, says Jennifer Lynn Stover, author of The Sonic Color Line.
It shapes the way we think and understand how the music industry works, and it really hides all of these practices over the years.
The Grammys are going to use the word progressive instead of urban. A.D. Carson at UVA says that, too, could be problematic.
We just probably have to be careful that, you know, like the changing of the words don't end up, you know, just being another, like we end up with another euphemism that isn't really that different.
Another euphemism that just ends up meaning music by Black artists. I'm Erica Barris for Marketplace.
Like, pretty much everybody, it seems, we do basically all of our meetings around here at Marketplace on Zoom. By its metric, the video conference company's, quote, daily meeting participants, that's the phrase they use, that's hit 300 million. And with success like that, obviously comes scrutiny. There was a whole encryption thing back when quarantine started, if you remember that. And today, censorship and China. An American activist who held a Zoom meeting to commemorate the Tiananmen crackdown back in 1989, had his account turned off. From Washington, Marketplace's Scott Tong has that one.
The Zoom meeting in question was joined by 250 activists discussing the Tiananmen killings from 31 years ago, some logged on from China. When the meeting host had his Zoom account disabled days later, it was no surprise to Sarah Cook. She's with the human rights group Freedom House and says tech companies often target Chinese users around the world.
Somebody will post something on their account that is deemed to be sensitive in China, and LinkedIn will then send them a message telling them that their profile is now no longer visible to people in China.
Late yesterday, Zoom restored the user account, but it also said in a statement that it's necessary to comply with local law around the world. Zoom has customers and data servers in China. Graham Webster is with the Stanford Cyber Policy Center.
It's possible that Zoom feels political pressure from China that would lead it to try to stamp out discourse around the world that the Chinese government wouldn't like.
This comes at a tough moment for a company that soared in the pandemic. It faces stiff competition to host video meetings. And Zoom has another issue. Its technology is not the most secure, says Justin Sherman at the Atlantic Council think tank.
Which potentially means that Zoom or other entities could be turning over access to calls or listening in on conversations.
Many multinational firms now ban Zoom. And today, several professors who teach China studies said they won't use it either. I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
There have been, over the past couple of months, a whole lot of forecasts about where this economy is going, what gross domestic product, in other words, is going to do over the next couple of quarters, which means you have been hearing a whole lot of this coming out of my mouth.
The Federal Reserve Bank of Atlanta has revised its estimate. It now figures the economy is going to shrink 53%, and this is important, 53% on an annualized basis in the second quarter.
The Atlanta Fed has since revised that estimate again to 48.5% GDP shrinkage. But what really I need you to understand about this isn't that number itself. It's that whole annualized thing.
53% on an annualized basis in the second quarter.
I'm going to say it again. Annualized. Annualizing means taking something that happens over a short period of time and extrapolating it out over an entire year. You make $1,000 a week, for instance, that weekly wage annualized is $52,000. So in terms of GDP, say the economy shrinks 1% over one quarter. To annualize that, as economic prognosticators like to do, you assume the economy is going to shrink 1% the next quarter, and then 1% the quarter after that, and then 1% again the quarter after that. That 1% quarterly decline annualized winds up being 4%, which is what you're going to see and hear in the headlines. All right, actually, it's a hair over 4%, the miracle of compounding at work there, but we will spare you the math. What you need to take away from this 2 minutes of radio is that when you hear stuff like this,
the economy is going to shrink 53% in the second quarter.
It's not 53% just in quarter two, which would be apocalyptically bad. It's 53% annualized. Or 18% quarterly, which is bad enough. So annualizing when growth rates are steady and in line with what everybody has been expecting is not so bad a way of doing things. When what's going on in the economy is uncertain at best, like, oh, now, that annualized rate, it can sound pretty out of tune. Coming up.
It's been kind of a day.
I feel you. I really, really do. But first, let's do the numbers. Looks as if the aliens gave up control of the markets today. Remember Sabri's piece from like a week, 10 days ago? Stock market's an alien because it was going up. It's not going up anymore. Dow Industrials plummeted 1,861 points, 6.9%, 25,128. The NASDAQ off 527 points, more than 5.25% there, 94.92. The S&P 500 slumped 188 points, that's about 5.8%, landed at 3,002. That index did. One of the reasons the market's cratered is the fear, as I said, that reopening this economy, which has started to give some companies a boost, is going to lead to a new wave of infections. Airline stocks among those at the beginning of the week taking flight. Today, Thursday, steep losses. United dropped more than 16%. Delta down about 14%. American Airlines off 15.5%. Retail as well. Macy's got whacked, down 14%. Nordstrom unzipped more than 12%. Today, you're listening to Marketplace. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. The reality shows Cops and Live PD have both been canceled in the past couple of days. Trashy TV to some, pop culture fixtures and revenue generators to others. Marketplace's Jasmine Garz has more on police and TV.
When many Americans hear this, bad boys, what you gonna do? They immediately think of footage of police chases. It's been the theme song for the show that premiered on Fox in 1989. It was very cheap to make and one of the network's most profitable shows. Brandi Collins Dexter is with The Color of Change, a nonprofit that has been protesting the show for years.
It sort of depicts an alternative reality from what everyday Black people experience in a way that then either paves over the harms or justifies the harms that happen in Black communities.
Cop's success paved the way for Live PD. Since the show debuted in 2017, its ad revenues grew by around 130%. Professor Mickey Turner from the University of Southern California says in these shows,
these cops were presented as people who were there to save the day.
And yet earlier this week, reports surfaced of Javier Ambler, a black man who died in custody after being stopped by Texas police for failing to dim his headlights and getting tased. The Live PD crew was filming. Footage never aired and was destroyed. Professor Greg Cavender from Arizona State University says these shows have a cozy relationship with law enforcement.
We see a lot of things on Cops, but we don't see Rodney King. We don't see George Floyd or Freddie Gray or any of those kind of things.
Activists say canceling Cops and Live PD is a start, but cop dramas are still being made. Police critics say they should also show the bigger picture, including bad officers. I'm Jasmine Garst for Marketplace.
Even in the best of times, when life is normal, farming is a really stressful life. What's the weather going to be? What are commodity prices doing? And oh, by the way, trade wars and tariffs? And now coronavirus and COVID piling on the stress, and they have come at a time when mental health care is harder to come by than usual. Elisa Roth covers mental health for American Public Media.
The farm in Minnesota where Thomas Duden raises dairy cows belongs to his wife's family. Besides the milk they produce, they also sell hay. And last year, they started renting farm equipment just to make ends meet.
But it just seems like the harder I work, the further we get behind.
The stress of trying to keep the farm afloat, plus some other stuff in his personal life, pushed him to the edge. And he's not the only one, because farmers as a whole are struggling with their mental health. Suicide rates are 1.5 times higher than in the general population, and there are high rates of substance use, too. Duden says he thought about suicide more than once.
You'd cross my mind staging an accident. You're on the farm. It'd be easy to mask.
It took years before he finally admitted he needed help. Now he pays for his own therapist and a marriage counselor, all of which can add up to $800 a month, depending how often he sees them. In Minnesota, farmers do have some access to free mental health care through a unique program from the state agriculture department that funds 2 therapists. The state has allocated $250,000 a year to pay for it. Monica McConkie is one of them. Farmers and others in the agriculture industry call her for advice and therapy, which can be either a one-off or a regular thing.
Most of it is the actual farmer, whether it's male farmer or female farmer. But I definitely get calls from spouses as well.
Before COVID, McConkie and her colleagues spent their days driving around the state to see those farmers and trying to raise awareness about mental health. Now, of course, it's all remote. Thomas Duden says it's hard to make mental health part of the conversation because it goes against farm culture.
We did not have feelings that you were happy or you were sad. That was it.
COVID-19 is complicating all of this, even though Monica McConkie says when it first started, COVID barely registered for farmers who were worried about other things and were already socially distanced. Now McConkie says she's starting to hear more about how COVID is putting a strain on farms. Some farmers have lost jobs they had taken off the farm to keep the family afloat. Others have been forced to dump milk or kill off pigs and chickens because they can't get them to market. Uncertainty is a given in farming, but COVID is taking that uncertainty to a whole other level.
When there's no end date and your livelihood and your family's legacy is at stake, that is incredibly stressful because you have no control over it.
She says calls dropped off a little in May as farmers focused on getting spring plantings in, but she's expecting they'll pick up again soon and then some. In the Twin Cities, I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
This pandemic caught a lot of people unawares, I suppose, right? But also kind of in between somehow, at the end of something or just starting something else. Life and business, though, do still have to go on. Marketplace's Mariel Segarra has been talking to a first-time entrepreneur in Denver who is trying to make a dream happen at the worst possible time.
It's Memorial Day weekend, and Maris Johansson is sitting in her backyard, recording her thoughts on her phone.
Okay, it's Friday night, just about 9 o'clock. Just got the kids down. Came outside here because I wanted to read this email that I saw from a customer.
Maris owns a store called Broomtail that sells children's clothing and toys, like hobby horses handmade from yarn. She opened it for the first time in mid-May after the state lifted its pandemic restrictions. I asked her to record this audio diary a couple weeks into her new business. Back to that email.
She says, "Hello, my friend and I would love to make an appointment to shop tomorrow. Do you have anything? 11:30-ish. She is newly pregnant, and I would love her first baby shopping experience to be at your adorable store." So I've probably read it about 5 times already, and I'll probably read it a couple more times before I go to bed instead of, you know, scrolling through the news on my phone. And I'm hoping that will help me sleep tonight.
Maris has dreamt of owning a business since she was a kid. Growing up in Chicago, she had all these side hustles, walking dogs and going into business with her brother.
We would make beaded necklaces and sell them to kids on the bus.
As an adult, she went to business school and worked in the corporate world at Google and Unilever. Then when she got pregnant with her son, Logan, who's now 3.5, she had an idea for a children's store that would also be a place for moms to gather. The plan was to open in late March of this year. Then the pandemic hit. On Saturday morning, Maris gets up, gets dressed, and tries to get her kids ready.
Yeah, let's get dressed. Frankie.
Frankie, her 18-month-old daughter, does not want to get dressed. Just after 10 o'clock, her husband and kids are in the yard, and she leaves for the store.
All right, love you guys. See ya. Bye.
Have a good day, Mom.
Thanks, you too.
Once she gets to the shop, the cleaning ritual begins.
So I actually cleaned all of the counters last night before I left, but I'm doing it again because I just feel like the smell of cleaning solution is reassuring to people.
She wipes down the card reader with alcohol, vacuums, and puts on her mask.
I feel like this is when I kind of have to brace myself because I'm still getting used to wearing a mask for 7 hours a day. I get my last kind of free deep breaths in and then the mask goes on and it's go time.
The morning gets off to a good start. Within the first half hour, the woman who emailed comes in with her friend and they both buy something.
So I think today's going to be a good day.
But by 2 o'clock, things have taken a turn.
All right, it's been an hour. No one has been in the store. Haven't even seen many people walking by out front. So this is typical in my day. Like I'll be excited and then, you know, kind of feeling in the dumps right now. And, you know, I'm always like, if I see anyone out front, I'm always trying to strike the balance of being, you know, excited and looking welcoming, but not looking like I'm too desperate or I'm bored.
The rest of the day isn't much better. At closing time, she records this.
It's been kind of a day. I know that's not very eloquent, but that's how I feel. I had 4 sales today. Not horrible. I've yet to have a 0 sales day, so that's something to be grateful for. But yeah, it, you know, wasn't great. All right. Bye.
That was the last recording. Maris just crunched the numbers, and she's not making quite enough in sales to cover her costs. But she's close. She's prepared to dip into her savings to keep the business going as long as she can. I'm Mariel Segarra for Marketplace.
This final note on the way out today, just a quick big business corollary to Kimberly's story up top about how small businesses are navigating the conversations we're all having about racism in this society. Walmart said this week it's going to stop keeping what it calls multicultural personal care products under lock and key, the obvious inference being the world's biggest retailer thought those things would be more likely to be stolen given their audience. To be clear, it was only happening in about a dozen of Walmart's 4,700 stores, but still. All right, we got to go. Here's your moment of economic context to tide you over till next we meet. It's going to be a little controversial, so bear that in mind, and we will get into it more tomorrow on the Friday show. Tomorrow's Friday, right? Yeah? Okay. I know it just became official, but it is entirely possible that this recession is technically already over, which, yes, I know, seems crazy. Amir Bibawi, Siobhan Brett, John Buckley, Eve Epstein, John Gordon, Kat Green, Rick Carr, and Betsy Streisand are the Marketplace editing staff. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.